This month, our spiritual theme is God, not a small topic to be taking on. And I wonder whether it's strategic or merely coincidental that this theme falls on the shortest month of the year. No, the theme of God is not a small one. Volumes have been written about God, and the debate over the existence of God will probably never die out. Our religious tradition provides us with many sources to draw on in reflecting on this topic. Our direct experience, the words and deeds of prophetic people, wisdom from the world's religions. And two obvious sources are found in our denomination's name, Unitarian Universalism. Thomas Starr King was famous for his bridging of these two wings of our merged faith, and he is claimed to have contributed to the often quoted aphorism, "Universalists believed that God was too good to damn them forever, and Unitarians believed they were too good to be damned." So go on if you haven't heard it before. Other such statements exist. Unitarians use their heads, Universalists use their hearts. Unitarianism is for the elite, and Universalism for the populace and the downtrodden. And as with most things, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Universalism, or the other U, as I like to call it, is a part of our religious history and legacy that's not often looked into or probed for the religious truths it might hold for us today, in our time. So today, I want to explore with you how this part of our tradition and its beliefs about God can make a difference in how we live now. And I want to thank the group, the small group who gathered with me last Sunday, to participate in a conversation about universalism. Your insights and many, many questions were very helpful in thinking about this sermon. At the time of its emergence in the United States over 200 years ago, the main theological claim of universalism was this: all will be saved through God's everlasting love. This may sound obvious or simply irrelevant to our ears today, but at this time, and still to some conservative religious communities, this claim was quite revolutionary. Many early Universalists were kicked out of or left their Christian churches because of their adoption of Universalist beliefs. George de Benneville began preaching a Universalist message in the 18th century in Europe, and he was nearly beheaded for preaching to an underground group of Protestants in what was then Normandy. He eventually made his way right here to Germantown, Pennsylvania, in the mid part of that century, because he had heard word of the religious tolerance of the colony of Pennsylvania at the time. Elanon Winchester was the pastor of a Baptist church also in Philadelphia, and he was kicked out in 1781 for adopting Universalist beliefs. John Murray may be a name that's a little more familiar to some of you, the conference and retreat center that our men's group goes to regularly bears the name of John Murray. And Murray converted to Universalism in England while serving as a Methodist minister. And he left that religious tradition, setting sail for America in 1770. He became shipwrecked on the New Jersey shore, began his preaching career there, and eventually made his way to Massachusetts. These men and the Universalist men and women who came after them early in the movement were religious rebels, willing to speak out for the sake of their revolutionary truth that all will be saved. This conclusion was not the only radical truth that the Universalists held fast to. They could make the case for universal salvation because of their unwavering confidence in a sovereign but loving God. They held an absolute faith that God's love was an indestructible and everlasting force present to all of humankind. Universalism grew and developed over time, becoming influenced by new philosophies and theologies along the way. But over the years, it has held on to one basic truth: God is love. By reimagining who God is, the Universalists placed love front and center in our religious language as Unitarian Universalists. And love remains a term that we UUs continually come back to when discussing our religious values. That is our Universalist legacy. And I don't think you need to believe in the same God that those early Universalists did to embrace this legacy today. I personally do not believe that God is a sovereign deity who exists way above or beyond this world with the power to control our fate. It's not something I believe. The early Universalist confidence and optimism in a loving but supreme God just doesn't resonate with me. God, for me, is the name that I use to describe the vast mystery and spirit of life that connects us all. It is, to use Paul Tillich's words, the ground of my being, the ground of all being, life's ultimate meaning. Clarence Skinner's more modernized description of the Universalist idea of God finds a bit more resonance with me. He describes the Universalist idea of God as a universal, impartial, immanent spirit whose nature is love. It is universal, meaning present to all people and all creation. It is impartial, regarding all equally, and it is imminent, available to us here and now. And the nature of this God is love. The feminist theologian Carter Hayward speaks in a similar way about God. For her, this is God with a small g. She's very clear. God with a small g, and she says that God is nothing other than the eternally creative source of our relational power, our common strength, a God whose movement is to empower, bringing us into our own together, a God whose name in history is love. This notion of God takes God out of the heavens, out of hell, and into our human lives. We are the creators of that God-like force present between us. A God whose name in history is love. The Universalists began our journey down a truly radical path of belief regarding salvation and God. Theirs is a radical legacy for us, but a legacy can simply become forgotten history if we don't live it out in the present. The founding Universalists took those first radical steps, and we must determine what ours will be today. And I believe that we will only discover this if we attempt with all our hearts to take that Universalist truth that the nature of God is love and to make that truth real and visible in the world. We must put that truth into action. Many in our faith community have already been doing this. A recent example is the Unitarian Universalist Association's Standing on the Side of Love campaign. For nearly a decade, the phrase "standing on the side of love" has been the slogan for our denomination's support of marriage equality. And the big yellow banner that stretches across our front entrance there on Lincoln Drive proclaims that this congregation is standing on the side of love. The denomination formalized this Standing on the Side of Love campaign as a public advocacy campaign in 2009 in response to a shooting in a Unitarian Universalist congregation the previous year. Some of you may recall this tragic event. One Sunday morning, the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation in Knoxville, Tennessee, was gathered for worship. And the children were in the middle of performing a play when a man by the name of Jim Atkinson walked into the sanctuary with a semi-automatic shotgun and began shooting. Police arrived within minutes, but not before he had killed two people and injured six others. The congregation was an active and well-known force in that part of the state for equal rights for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, and for women and for people of color. Just 2 years before the shooting, the congregation's youth group had joined a group of LGBTQ youth in organizing a demonstration in a local park after two same-sex teens were harassed for holding hands in the park. And the shooter that morning left a letter in his car describing his hatred of the liberal movement in general and of same-gender-loving people in particular. The Tennessee Valley UU congregation was stepping out boldly to make real and visible the truth that the nature of God is love. Here is another Standing on the Side of Love story. When Arizona State Bill 1070, the now infamous anti-immigration legislation, became state law 2 years ago, the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Phoenix organized a march and rally and protest of the law, and hundreds of local congregants participated. They streamed through downtown Phoenix wearing those famous bright yellow t-shirts, which Dennis had on earlier, pronouncing that they were standing on the side of love. And there wasn't much else to identify who this group of brightly shirted folks was. And so other participants in the march and rally started calling out to them, "Hey, you're the love people. You're the love people. Make real and visible the truth that the nature of God is love. Love is present to us and available always. But we must choose over and over again to make it real for others and for ourselves." Carter Hayward says that we are not automatic lovers of self, of others, world, of God. Love does not just happen, she says. We are not love machines, puppets on the strings of a deity called love. We must choose to make love real and visible. Making it real means making it concrete, not allowing love to remain sentimental, but making it active and effective. Here at the Unitarian Society of Germantown, we are not in Knoxville, Tennessee, or Phoenix, Arizona. The forces working against love may not be as obvious to us. Acts of hatred may not be as blatant. We may have to think a bit more critically and reflect a little more deeply on how in our personal lives, in this religious community, and out in the broader world, we make real and visible that truth, that the nature of God or that life's ultimate meaning is love. So I invite you in this moment to just reflect a little bit on your own of what is one way that you can make this love concrete. What is one way? one way that you can make real and visible the truth that life's ultimate meaning, that the nature of God is love. And I really want you to think about it, so I'm going to pause while you reflect. And this may be a little out of the box, but I invite you to take a moment, turning to your neighbor, and to share, just in a brief moment, one way that you can make this love concrete. Thank you all for sharing. And perhaps if you have more than one way and you'd like to keep talking about how you're going to make this love concrete, you can do so in fellowship hour. This may mean a lot of different things, and you may have come up with a lot of different ideas. Perhaps it's being a loving presence for someone in your life who's having a difficult situation. It may mean going out of your way to meet someone. Perhaps even meet someone here in this sanctuary who you would typically avoid because of some perception or something you think about them that may or may not be true. It may mean showing up at an upcoming rally or demonstration for equal rights for the lesbian, gay, and transgender community. I heard on the radio today that that bill is moving forward in Harrisburg to have an anti-discrimination law against discriminating against lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered persons in our state, or a demonstration for immigrant rights, or in support of public education. There are so many ways we can make this love concrete. The radical journey those early universalists began for us continues today as we choose again and again to make real, visible, and concrete a God whose name in history is love. Amen. Let us put our voices together in hymn number 34 in your gray hymnal, "Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire."